south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
Ah, that gringo advantage. It's present all the time, but not so much on the gringo tourist trail, where you're pretty much just a person with a dollar sign on his forehead, a guy that's ripe to get gouged. As far as the gringo advantage, if you pay attention, you can notice it all the time. In fact, the other day I was in a Costco. It's called Price Mart down here. And you know, when you're all checked out, you got to go through an exit point where they look at your receipt and mark off the stuff in your shopping basket, you know, to see if someone's had sticky fingers. Well, isn't it funny? Latinos always have their receipts thoroughly checked out, but very rarely do they ever scrutinize me at all. They just look at me, see I'm a gringo, and pass me right on through. Now, the wokesters would say that's classist and racist, right? Because the Latina checkout lady is inferring us gringos and expats are more trustworthy and less likely to have sticky fingers than the locals. Well, call it what you will. I call it the gringo advantage. So what are you going to do? Demand equal treatment? Yeah, right. Try it. They'll think you're nuts. By the way, oftentimes I'm sitting around with expat gringos, newbies, and people who've been here a long time. And they start talking about lawyer ripoff stories. Yep, when gringos and expats get ripped off by their own lawyers. In fact, just this weekend, I was sitting around with a bunch of gringos, and that topic of conversation swung right to lawyer gouge and ripoff stories. Because one of those gringos was just freshly ripped off by his lawyer. So naturally, since we were all gringos, it turned into a kind of a competition. Who has the best lawyer ripoff story? Started out with a gringo guy, Jim, who got ripped off in the Dominican Republic. He said he gave a lawyer $500 to file some paperwork in the municipal court system regarding the value of his property. You see, the DR has an interesting property tax rule. If your property is worth $100,000 or less, you pay no property taxes ever. And sometimes, though very infrequently, when the government or municipality has a question about the value of your property, they'll ask for a lawyer to certify that. In other words, if your place is starting to look high class and really like a gem, sometimes you'll have to justify why the place is only worth 100 G's or less. So this particular gringo paid a lawyer $500 to put the proper paperwork together. And then about a year and a half later, when he went to sell the property, in other words, present day, he found that lawyer never registered the document. He just took the $500 and ran, causing an even bigger problem for the gringo who lost that dough. Then came gringo Kevin's lawyer ripoff story. Turns out he bought a very nice house in Panama City, worth around $350,000. And he did what you should do. He hired a lawyer to investigate the title to see if it was free and clear. You have to have your lawyer do it because, you see, title insurance and title insurance companies don't exist like they do up in the States. Down here, if you're going to buy a property, you have to have a lawyer do the title search. So anyway, the gringo had his lawyer check the title before he bought the place. And he found out the seller owned not only that place, but a couple of other houses and a meat processing business. It turns out, though, the guy owned a ton of back taxes on not that house, but the rest of his businesses. He owed something like 10 years back taxes on that meat processing plant. And my gringo friend found out that all this guy's back tax problems were bundled together at the municipality, and before they'd let the title clear on that house gringo Kevin wanted to buy, the seller had to settle that big back tax problem. So things were progressing, or so it seemed, and a month later, Kevin got a call from his attorney saying the title had cleared, the guy cleaned up his tax problem. Everything was a go. So they all met up at the seller's lawyer's office to close the deal, and they did it. Meanwhile, about a year later, that brings us up to present day, too. Kevin, an older guy, had some medical issues, and he had to go back to the States, so he decided to put his property up for sale. He had an instant buyer, too, another gringo friend of his. Well, his new gringo buyer friend, he did the proper thing. He hired a lawyer to check out the title, even though it seemed redundant because just a year earlier, a clean title search came up. Well, guess what? In doing the title search, Kevin was informed that the previous owner, the guy he bought it from, made a deal with the government to pay off his delinquent taxes in three installments, $20,000, $20,000, and $20,000. Yeah, that's right. He owed $60,000 in back taxes. Well, he paid off the first two installments, $20,000 and $20,000. But as it turns out, his lawyer, whoever that was, forged the third installment in order to get the title to clear for Kevin. One of the papers was perfectly forged, except something was wrong with the barcode on the paper. Now, they're putting barcodes on things like that so you can scan them. Well, it didn't scan, which was a huge red flag. And now this guy who forged those documents and sold that property to Kevin, he can't be found, and it turns out he unloaded all his other properties at the same time he sold his property to Kevin. And where is this guy now? Well, last they heard, he was in the U.S. because he married a gringa. So now the only way Kevin can sell his house is to get that title free and clear. Yep, Kevin has to either wait for that guy to show up if he ever does, or pony up to $20,000 himself, or he'll never have a clear title to sell it. So like I said, all the gringos in the group were telling their lawyer gouge and ripoff stories. And who had the topper? Well, it was yours truly. I told three different lawyer ripoff stories, and the one that beat them all was a story I told a long time ago on this show, probably 7 or 8 years ago now. Turns out I was looking to buy a car, found a nice 2-year-old Suzuki Vitara in the classified ads, and this was in Panama too. Took a ride out to see it, went into the garage and saw a nice late model Suzuki, all dusty and dirty, but nice. But all four tires were flat. Turns out it had been sitting in the garage about a year and a half. I tried to start it. It wouldn't turn over. It needed a new battery or maybe more. Anyway, it turns out a year earlier, the owner died. And the car was being sold by his estate. He was a retired military guy living in Panama. He was stationed in the Canal Zone when the U.S. still occupied it. So he knew firsthand about Plan Bs and how his military retirement package would let him live like a king in Panama. And or live like a pauper if he returned to the States. He retired in Panama. So anyway, the reason why they hadn't sold the car in over a year is because this guy had one relative, an estranged daughter up in the States in her late 30s. She'd never been down to Panama before. And everything passed to her, the car, the house. She had to go down to Panama to sign all the paperwork. Problem was, she didn't speak a lick of Spanish and had never been anywhere in Latin America before. So she was down for a couple of weeks just to clear all that up. And that's when they put that ad in the paper to sell that car. And I was in the market for just that kind of car, a mini SUV with a 4x4 traction. So I went over to see the car and ended up buying it. Now, we did the deal and signed all the paperwork in the lawyer's office. Turned out he was the longtime lawyer of her deceased dad. And when we were done, she invited me to a little cafe across the street for a cup of coffee. And it seemed to me there was some urgency involved with the request because she seemed just a little nervous, uptight, out of sorts. So we sat down, just us two. She looked around and said to me, "That lawyer swindled me. He's a crook," she said. "And there's nothing I can do about it. Maybe you can help me." And I'm thinking, oh no, I just want to buy a car and get out of here. I'm thinking, I'm not that guy. Not today. I just met you, lady. But I listened to her story. She said she'd been estranged from her dad for some decades. Then she had a kid, became a single mother, and reconnected with him a little bit near the end. He sent her photos of his house, his property, helped her out with some dough, and said she had a big inheritance coming. Towards the end, he was pretty sick and knew he wouldn't last long. He sent her photos of his nice, big house and great property, first world amenities all the way. And she said when she arrived just a week or two ago and went into the house, it was completely bare. She'd never been there before, but she'd seen what it looked like in all the pictures. And now it was completely bare. There wasn't a napkin, a toothpick, or even a paperclip. Not one roll of TP in the bathrooms. But, she said, the very first day she arrived and went over to her dad's lawyer's office, which was one of those deals where his office was attached to his house. Well, he invited her into his living room for a chat, and guess what? She recognized all the furniture, the desks, the sofas, refrigerator, the works, all the things that were missing from her dad's house that she recognized from the photos he sent. So on top of the 10 grand that guy charged her for settling her dad's estate, which was way too much, she felt, the guy ripped off every stick of furniture in her dad's house and probably would have ripped off the car too, except it had four flat tires and the engine wouldn't turn over. Well, luckily for me, I just had to change the spark plugs, get a battery and fill up the tires. And with a little teasing, it fired up just fine. Oh, and as for her dad's bank accounts, he had substantial money in the bank, but she never could find out just how much. Although she did find out that her dad's girlfriend was down on the bank's paperwork as the person those accounts reverted to in the event of his death. All that was a complete surprise to her because her dad had told her that she, his daughter, was the legal next of kin on those documents. So the accounts were supposed to go to her, But in the end, it was the girlfriend that got the dough. And as for the girlfriend, well, the daughter had never met her before, and she was long gone. But as she started putting two and two together, she figured the lawyer was most likely involved in that switcheroo, too. The fact is, there are tons of live-in couples that didn't get legally married, but after 6 months or so, the woman can claim common law marriage status. And if the guy dies, all she needs is a lawyer to verify that. So anyway, as for the guy's daughter's first trip to Panama, it was disappointment after disappointment. She said she just wanted to sell the house in a hurry and get the hell out of Panama. So bottom line, every time you get a bunch of gringos and expats together, you're going to hear bad lawyer stories. And that's generally because gringos find lawyers whichever way they can. Because eventually we all need a lawyer for something or another. Most often it's a rush decision too. You need one in a hurry. So you ask gringos at those notorious expat bars for their recommendations. Yeah, right. Worse yet, sometimes you get a lawyer referral from a Latino boyfriend, girlfriend, or even your cleaning lady or maintenance guy. Problem is, even if your Spanish is really good, there's almost no way to check up on these guys to see if they're legit or if they are known scammers. There are no consumer advocate websites to check out lawyers. And though there might be such sites, I haven't come across any of them yet. What they really need is a bilingual, that's English and Spanish, Latin scumbag lawyer website, where people could post comments and stories about their own lawyer experiences. Every Latin country needs one of those. That way you could check a guy out, look at the complaints and kudos. We really need to see the good, the bad, and the ugly testimonials that clients have posted. Well, maybe someday. We can dream, right? Oh, and by the way, the fact is, about 80% of the rotten lawyers in Latin America are on the gringo tourist trail because there are so many starry-eyed, non-Spanish-speaking, gullible gringos just lining up waiting to get cows, especially in gringoized places like Costa Rica, Panama, and the DR, and all those dozens and dozens of resort towns in Mexico. As for me, I've been through about 3 or 4 bad Latin lawyers myself. Some good ones, too. What do you expect? I've been down here 30-plus years now. In one case, I was hooked up with a very crooked lawyer, but he happened to be married to a good friend of mine, a British girl. So when I found out hook and crook, he was gouging most of his gringo clients. At least he didn't mess with me because of my earlier friendship with his wife. She'd have killed him if he pulled anything like that. You know who you are, Guillermo. In fact, I once overheard him at a party at his house talking and joking to some other lawyer friends of his how gullible newbie gringos were. Not a good sign. Talk about red flags. But that was on the gringo tourist trail. Like I said, when you're off the trail, there are just so few gringos that local lawyers just aren't that practiced in the art of the swindle. But when you get to those gringo hotspots, it's a different story. By the way, as for my seminar lawyer, he's been with us from the beginning, ever since we started the seminar thing about 10 years ago now. Oh, and by the way, I was his very first gringo client. And yes, he's on mañana time, they all are. And yes, he might not answer your texts, your phone calls, or emails for a couple of days. But no one, I mean no one's got a bad story of him ripping off anyone. In fact, when he's late with something or doesn't get something done on time. After all, us gringos come from a different culture. We want our stuff done yesterday, right? Anyway, when he's late or misses a deadline, he absolutely owns up to it. No excuses. You can't help but like him for that. So I always tell people when you're dealing with any Latin lawyer, you have to be on it. You can't just say, please do this, this, and that, send him some money, and wait. You have to check in with him regularly. The problem with almost every Latin lawyer I've ever met is that they don't write things down. I don't get it. Oh, and just sidetracking a bit. I never do that, right? When people ask for a few words of advice that I might give to adolescent kids on how to be a success in the future. Yeah, believe it or not, people do ask me questions like that. Yeah, right, like I'm the answer man. Well, I'll give it a shot anyway. I say, look, I've got 2, maybe 3 pieces of advice for young adolescent kids just getting started in life. First, I tell them the 2 things I learned on my very first day of engineering school when there was an assembly and the head of the school spoke for a while. He said, sorry to say, but less than half of you will graduate. And the others that do have 2 things in common. 1, they write things down. 2, they finish what they started. Even if it's a miserable and fruitless project, they finish it. Because, he said, the world is full of quitters. So if you get into the habit of finishing what you started, even if it's a tough, long, boring road, it will lead you to success. And he wasn't just talking about financial success either. He was talking about success in the self-esteem department. I mean, doesn't it feel good to finish a project? Let's say you're writing an article or changing your oil, painting a house, or building a picnic table. When you finish, it feels good. It's a nice big dopamine hit. Enough said about that. And now an email from Ben from Down Under. He says, "G'day, Johnny. Can you explain something to me, please? Because I'm a bit of a dumb prick. You see, I'm interested in buying some gold coins. I just had a look at one of the online gold suppliers here in Melbourne, and I'm trying to wrap my head around the fact that, for example, an American Eagle 1 ounce gold coin is $350 more than a Canadian Maple Leaf 1 ounce. I don't get it. They're both essentially the same, 1 ounce of pure gold." Clearly, he says, "I know bugger all about this stuff. Hope you can shine some light on that for me. Cheers, Ben from Down Under." All right, Ben, thanks for that. You know, I've been collecting silver and gold coins since the 1960s. Not that I had any dough to buy them, but my Uncle Bernie used to give me a silver dollar for every birthday. And I bought my first 1 ounce gold coin, a South African Krugerrand, in the late 70s. And since then, up until the time Bitcoin came around, I kept accumulating. And you know what? I've never sold any of it. Though I had the major portion of it stolen by an evil ex. That was before I came down to Latin America, so there were no Latinas involved. Talk about thieves and swindlers in your own backyard. I had an ex who actually stole, get this, it'll break your heart, 200 ounces of gold and 100 ounces of platinum. Value today, over $500,000. Back then, when gold was 350 and platinum 2, it was around 100 Gs. No small change, and man, I was understandably pissed off, far beyond the normal range of pissed offedness. And man, if there ever was a time I wanted to call the hitman hotline, but the internet and the dark web didn't exist back then. Good thing, too. Anyway, when bad things happen, usually you get over it, kinda. It helps when the rest of your life goes really well. But it does take time to regroup after a loss like that. So anyway, Ben, you came to the right guy. I know quite a bit about gold and silver and precious metals in general. And here's my take. The most recognizable 1 ounce gold coin in the world is the Canadian 1 ounce Maple Leaf coin. And pretty much tied for second and third place for number 2 and 3, the South African Krugerrand and the U.S. American Eagle. All three having exactly 1 ounce of gold in them. However, the Krugerrand is a little duller looking because it's got about 8.2% copper added to it to make it more durable. That means it's slightly larger than the Maple Leaf or American Eagle and less shiny too. So it's 22, not 24 carat. However, at one time, way back when, it was the only gold coin being produced in the world. And that's why it's so recognized, because other countries weren't cranking them out yet. And now you've got 15 sovereign countries cranking out gold and silver and platinum coins. You got the UK, China, Australia, Austria, and others. Still, as far as I'm concerned, the coin you want to hold and I want to hold is the Canadian 1 ounce gold Maple Leaf. It's really the most recognizable gold coin in the world. That means there's a big buy-sell market for it. By the way, you know those 100% gold coins like the Maple Leaf and the American Eagle, they can be scratched. You can bite them and put a dent into them like the old prospectors in movies used to do. By the way, that's why they put 10% copper in a South African Krugerrand, because it makes it so much harder. You can't put a dent in it by biting it. But then again, jewelers don't want Krugerrands. They want Maple Leafs or American Eagles, especially here in Latin America, because they'll just melt them down, knowing they're 24 carat or pure, and then they'll add the amount of copper and other metals to make 18 and 14 carat gold out of it. Standard gold jewelry stuff. That means if you've got a gold Canadian Maple Leaf or American Eagle, you can walk into a jewelry store in Latin America and they'll usually buy it off you. There's a ready market for that stuff, but not the Krugerrands. With collectors, yes, but not with jewelers. Anyway, Ben, I think your supplier's doing you a favor by selling you Canadian Maple Leafs at a discount to the others. Go for it, man. Get the Canadian Maple Leafs. You won't regret it. Oh, and don't forget to download one of those free gold ping apps on your smartphone. That way you can check your gold coins to make sure they're 24 karat or 0.999 fine gold. That's always stamped on Canadian Maple Leafs and American Eagles. For the ping test, all you do is turn your app on, balance the coin on an eraser head, and give it a little tap. There'll be a very faint ring or ping, and your app will pick that up. And each gold coin has its own ping signature. So the app will tell you instantly if it's real or fake. That's why I never recommend buying gold ingots, you know, those rectangular gold pieces that come in a lot of different sizes. I'm against buying those because you can't do a ping test on them. That only works for round symmetrical coins. So with ingots or gold that's not in coin form, you'll never really know if it's pure gold all the way through, because there are so many counterfeits out there. Of course, those fakes feel heavy just like gold. But how it's done is they usually take tungsten, a heavy metal, and just gold-plated. And there are lots and lots of fake gold coins, too. Maple leaves, American eagles, Kugrans, the works. But they won't pass the ping test. All right, moving on. You know, I'm a big fan of solar, especially here in Latin America where the sun's shining all the time. And if you're in the Altiplano, you've got no heat or air conditioning costs, that means you could rig up a solar system down here for less than half the price of what you'd pay up in the States. And now I'm hearing, according to an article sent by listener Wes, that California, the state that's got the most solar power per capita in the United States, is about to lower the hammer on solar users, forcing them to pay what they're calling a grid tax if you've got solar panels. In other words, it seems California is a victim of its own success and giving us another couple of reasons why it's time to get the hell out of Dodge. And if you live in California, probably the worst of all states, there's no hope for you. So imagine that. If you live up in the good old USS of A, if your plan was to become self-sufficient, get the hell off the grid, Big Brother's about to ruin those plans too. State governments are realizing they lose state tax revenue if you get off the grid and don't pay electric charges anymore. So now they're devising laws to penalize you for having solar. Well, that's never going to happen here in Latin America, but if you live up in the States and decide to switch to solar, in the words of B.B. King, the thrill is gone. So anyway, listener Wes, who, by the way, is coming to my Expat Insider Seminar, starts in about 2 weeks from when this broadcast goes out. He sends me this blurb from a guy who's using solar power in California. He says, I switched to solar in California. It just made sense to me because we get so much sun. However, I've not saved money because the electric company takes the watts that I make during the day with my solar and gives me the lowest amount of payback per unit when I sell the excess power back to them. Then, when I use watts at night, when the sun's not shining, of course, and I have to buy electricity from the grid, they charge me top dollar for the watts and energy that I use. He says, I spent $23,000 on my solar system and only save about $1,000 per year. I'm super frustrated. Worse yet, they only give you a credit on your bill if you owe taxes. As far as I know, California has never given me any tax credits. On top of that, he says, I pay a $10 per month fee just to be on the grid, a so-called grid charge. They're talking about raising it to 50, though they haven't yet. But I'm sure that'll come eventually. When that comes, my net for the year will be an average savings of around $500 for a $23,000 investment. And I don't even have an electric car. By the way, he says, that proposal to charge solar users $50 a month for what the commission calls grid participation charges, that comes from the fact that the commission's officials say changes are needed to ensure solar users are equally helping to maintain the state's power grid, which frequently becomes overloaded and ends up in failure mode. But critics say if that proposal is approved, the changes could effectively kill the rooftop solar business in California, making it virtually impossible for most middle and working class people to be able to afford solar panels. Well, Wes, here's my take on that. Of course, my slant is on doing solar here in Latin America. It really pays off. Though I think the biggest mistake people make, at least up in the States when they're doing solar, is they don't get batteries. They buy into the idea that they can sell excess power back to the local grid. Yes, they can and will buy it back, but at the very lowest wholesale per kilowatt hour power rates. So if you don't have batteries, like Tesla Powerwalls, etc., there are many options. And most people in the States who have solar just have panels and inverters. No batteries. That means you can't store any energy yourself. You have to count on grid power at night. That also means during the daytime with lots of sun, you're overproducing and selling energy back to the grid, but being paid a pitifully low wholesale rate, let's say 3 cents a kilowatt hour. Then at night, when everyone's electric use goes way up because the lights are all on and everyone's watching Netflix, now you're buying electricity from the grid and paying the retail electric kilowatt hour rate, and you're getting taxed on it, usually at 10 cents or more a kilowatt hour. That's more than three times what the power company's paying you to buy your excess electricity during the day. It's a terrible deal and absolutely not fair, but that's the setup in the States, Europe, and Australia. The only way around it is to go completely off the grid. That means you're going to need some storage batteries, Tesla Powerwalls, or some of the other options. But as our emailer shows, you're still beholden to the government. They're going to tax you, calling it a grid participation charge. Yep, the malignant state bureaucrats are going to come out, check your house, count your panels, and tax you. Even if you have batteries and are completely off the grid. Why? Because solar energy kills state tax revenue. Have you looked at your electric bill lately? Have you checked out how much of that is tax and excess charges, which are just hidden taxes under another name? So my advice, whether you're up in the States or down here in Latin America, get some batteries when you do your solar system, or else you can run into the very same problems our emailer ran into. You'll end up buying electricity at night at the highest rate. Oh, and for solar systems here in Latin America, I've had a couple of different ones at various places now, and I don't sell it back to the local electric power company. Although a lot of Latin countries are starting to let you do that now, just like up in the States, I personally prefer to stay an arm's length away from any government entity. That means I don't want to fill out the paperwork and jump through the hoops necessary to be able to sell power back to the local grid. And if that means I have excess power during the day that's going to waste, well, so be it. By the way, one way to solve that problem is to buy a few Bitcoin ant mining machines, or any of the other units that mine shitcoins. That means all the excess energy you produce during the day will be converted little by little into your own cryptocurrency in your own wallet. So that is a great way to reclaim all the energy you may have lost by not selling the excess back to the grid. And as we've shown, that's not really worth it. In fact, you're more likely to get pissed off when you look at your electric bill than crack a smile. Oh, and just one more thing. You know, Biden's got that huge, what is it, $2.5 trillion infrastructure bill? People are talking about that all the time and all the pork that's baked into it. But have you ever considered this? All the roads and bridges that are 50, even 100 years old and are in terrible shape? Most people are thinking, yeah, we need an infrastructure bill. That stuff has to be brought up to snuff. Or it's downright dangerous, right? But here's what you didn't know. Every single gallon of gas you buy has a huge tax built into it. For example, if you look up the spot price of a gallon of regular gas, it's about $2.50. And that extra dollar a gallon you pay for gas because it's $3.50 a gallon, well, that's a road and infrastructure tax. Look it up. So then where do those billions of dollars of gas taxes go and what are they for? Again, look it up. It's for road and bridge maintenance and repair. Duh. By the way, we're talking about $300 billion a year in road taxes collected at the pump. By the way, same thing with car and truck license fees. Where does that money go? There's billions there too. Where does that money go? Toxic bureaucrats are siphoning it off for their own purposes. They always have. Though it's supposed to go to road and bridge maintenance and infrastructure. Yet those maggots in Congress are trying to push through a $2.5 trillion infrastructure package. Think about that for a while. By the way, how's your plan B coming?
You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.